You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
And we are here to talk to you today about what could have been, what was thought about, and what was almost, but never was. And that is unconfirmed episodes for Season 4. Even though we said it was season 3, it was actually season 4, but I mean, some of these things bleed in to either season, but it's around the 97-98 time frame, just to put this in perspective.
Yes.
This document was sent to us by Stephen Townend, a fan of the show and a now friend, and there's about 16 episode ideas of the unconfirmed episodes, and this list was actually made during the time that Voyager was going on. This was a document that was posted online. This was a behind-the-scenes insider document of possible upcoming episodes. And this was even before the Borg came onto the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Within this list, you can see the roots of actual episodes that happened but are very different. But you can also see some episodes where you're like, oh my gosh, I wish that happened. And a few where you're like, yeah, there's a reason why that didn't make it onto the screen.
Indeed. Yeah, apparently this was originally posted on rec.arts.startrek.voy, which, for those of you who don't know, was an ancient thing called a news group, where it was essentially a very primitive sort of message board system / RSS feed where you could subscribe to it and you'd get new ones sent to you, and people would just be exchanging text messages back and forth. There were a lot of Star Trek groups, too. There was one for every show.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And there was, you know, just kind of a general one. There was stuff for fan fiction. There was stuff, I mean, for everything, for art. I don't even know how many. It was too much. I couldn't read them all back in the day.
Just imagine, like, if today's message boards were run on MS-DOS. That's what this was like.
That's right. Yes. Imagine the Trek BBS on MS-DOS.
Yeah.
And you've got 1995.
Yeah. Well, Char, you and I read this list, and we read it a couple of times, and there's a lot of great episode titles in here, and a lot of great ideas, and a lot of not-so-great ideas. And so there's only 16, so we're going to go through the list one by one, and some we're going to spend more time than others. But with this in mind, we'll talk about maybe how we would have liked to have seen the episode go, or how it wouldn't have worked, or how it would have worked. But let's just go ahead and start with idea one.
Number one, called The Impervious, where the crew discovers another Starfleet ship in the Delta Quadrant. Well, now this sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Right, it sounds a little bit like the Equinox. Now, as you can see, this is not an in-depth episode description. Some are more than others, but this one, it just has a fleeting idea, so...
Yeah, this is it.
Obviously, this one happened. We saw this one, and it worked out really well.
Yeah, it ultimately came to fruition, and they apparently had this idea for a while, took their time with it, developed it, and then we eventually got the Equinox in the following season 5, from when this thing came out. So what's number two?
Number two is Fratricide, a blue-on-blue friendly fire incident followed by a hectic court-martial. Now, this one I'm a little confused on. So is this one connected with the Impervious? Like, you know, is the friendly fire incident on the other Starfleet ship that they find, or is the friendly fire ship with a with an alien group that they had allegiance with, or was it like they accidentally fired on a shuttlecraft, their own shuttlecraft, and a crewman, an actual Voyager crewman, died or something? You know, like this, you don't really know, and it could go in either direction.
Yeah, and then followed by a hectic court-martial, that makes me think that it's either a sequel to The Impervious,
right,
or it's something like people that we're familiar with that are allies, like, say, the Talaxians, or something like that, and they get really ticked off that there was fired or shots fired, and then we have this court-martial. This actually sounds maybe a little boring to me, but if written correctly, could be fascinating.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, we've had court episodes before, and they've gone really well, you know, i.e. the Dromhead from Star Trek The Next Generation.
True. We also had in Voyager, Death Wish, where it was a hearing, not a trial, but close enough.
So, but with the idea of a hectic court-martial, it makes me feel like it's Starfleet procedure, you know, where it's human against human. So it makes me feel like maybe someone fired the phasers on Voyager when they weren't supposed to, and like their own crew member died. I don't know. Like, there's just not enough information to go about. I think it would have been interesting to see, but I think you're right. I mean, you walk that fine line of really like intriguing and really boring.
Yeah, definitely a tough one. Had they done it correctly, could have been amazing, like Measure of a Man, or absolutely horrible, say, let's take down The Menagerie from TOS down a few steps.
Yeah.
And you've got court TV.
Yeah, we don't want Voyager court TV. All right.
No.
Number three.
In Harm's Way is the episode title, and the description for this one says, the crew is gradually drawn into a violent planetary revolution. Now, this sounds sort of like Nemesis.
Yeah, that's the first thing that popped into my head, too, is when I read this. And this can also go in so many different ways, and you could use this probably 15 times throughout the show.
You probably could, although we'd eventually catch on.
Yeah, we're like, hey, this sounds a lot like when the crew was gradually drawn into a violent planetary revolution last time.
Like last week, yeah. Yeah, but there are so many ways that you could go about this. It could be a fascinating story, and unfortunately, I'm not a big fan of Nemesis. I think it's got a great message. It's just the execution,
Yeah.
No, they could have done better.
Yeah, it was like they tried to do Darmok Light. Where, like, they spoke in such a different way where it was just enough to be annoying, but not enough to intrigue you into wanting to learn it.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't endearing like Darmok was, where it was very key to what was happening with the main plot. It was just, I don't know, it's sort of like that Enterprise episode where that's so shale.
That's immediately when I saw that Enterprise episode where like they just had like four words that were unique to their culture and shale was the one that was lying, and I immediately thought back to Nemesis.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they did Mad Libs for the script. They just put in random words, although for the Enterprise episode, three out of the four words was shale.
Yeah.
So that's what they did.
All right, on our next one, number four is Oblivion, and no, not the Oblivion that actually happened. It's the crew discovers a wormhole that eventually turns into a black hole.
Okay.
So I don't know how you can find story in that, where they're like, Harry's like, hey, holy crap, we found a wormhole. They're traveling in the wormhole, and then they have to escape the event horizon, and then end of episode? Like, is that...
The only way I see this episode working is if it's something like an alien species trying to sort of like lure them in, sort of like a spider into the web, where by the time you realize what you've done, it's too late. But then, of course, Voyager has to get out of it anyway because there has to be next week.
Or they're treating a black hole like Star Trek always does instead of what it actually is, and it's a portal and a time suck like in J.J. Abrams' Star Trek 09. Mm. Where instead of destroying you and ripping you to shreds, it actually throws you back in time safely. Maybe that's what that is.
Is there going to be red matter involved with this? Because if that's the case, just no, let's write this off.
Well, I think either way, I think there's more to it than just, oh, holy crap, we have to throw on reverse thrusters.
Well, there has to be. But I can see why this was a short-lived idea. I don't see it going very far at all.
Now, Char, number five, I'm quite, quite excited about and wish happened. Tell us what number five is.
I don't think you're the only one, buddy. Based on the title alone, people are going to freak at this. The title is called Two-Way Mirror, and yes, you guessed it. This is a Mirror Universe episode. It's going to start in a Voyager show and end the following week in a DS9 show, or the other way around. We were going to have a crossover Mirror Universe.
A crossover Mirror Universe episode between Voyager and Deep Space Nine.
Mind blown.
Why didn't this happen?
Okay, now this would have been epic.
This would have been amazing. They would have released this, the grand VHS tape with the two episodes on it, for $20.
That's
And we would have bought it. And we would have bought it.
Abso-freaking-lutely. Oh, man, this would have been fantastic because it would have been some Star Trek cross-promotion. So fans of Voyager who weren't really into DS9, it could have led them into the series with this and vice versa. Plus, the DS9 Mirror Universe is freaking awesome. It's crazy. And then we never really did see Voyager Mirror Universe. This would have been a really creative way to do the Mirror Universe on Voyager while adding the enhancement of cross-promotion.
Yeah, exactly. And we did get Tuvok in the Mirror Universe of Deep Space Nine.
True.
But, I mean, you could tell that the seeds were there. The idea was there. Like, how can we get the Voyager crew on there? And so instead of going full force and fleshing it out and making it happen, they punked out and said, okay, well, let's just do a drop in the bucket.
Now, I think the big question is, how are you going to interconnect both of these series? Because Voyager's in the Delta Quadrant, DS9 is just outside the Gamma Quadrant. I would just say that in the Mirror Universe, Voyager never went to the Delta Quadrant.
Seeing how there's different factions, it's not just Federation and Maquis, you know, it's different factions involved in the Mirror Universe. Mm-hmm. You know, they would have a ship, like maybe there was a collection of crew and they'd have a ship named Voyager, or, you know, like it's not a Starfleet ship, but whatever.
Yeah, it's not Voyager as we know it. It's just called Voyager.
Yeah, it's not Voyager as we know it. It's just called Voyager or something to that effect, or it's called something else and it's just everybody put together, or a few people put together, mixed in maybe with some Deep Space Nine people, and maybe even mixed in with some Next Generation people. Now that would be cool.
Ooh, superior epic.
and then so they get lost in the Delta Quadrant in the same way, but they find their way home in the using that wormhole that the Ferengis used, except in this universe it's completely stable. And that's how we have Deep Space Nine and whatever the Voyager is interact.
Makes sense to me. And then because it's the Mirror Universe, they could be going back and forth in this wormhole to basically take over the Delta Quadrant. They are conquistadors. They are going to take what isn't theirs.
Yeah, see, I like that idea.
I have another idea, too. With the whole Starfleet and Maquis thing, yeah, it's a little different in the Mirror Universe, but what if the Maquis just raided this ship? Whatever it is, whatever Voyager is, and they are in charge.
Well, see, the thing is, the Maquis wouldn't exist.
True. Well, maybe the Maquis can just be some pirates or something.
There you go. It's just like the Maquis are pirates. Like, and Chakotay is head pirate.
Yeah, yeah. And he managed to take over the ship, and yeah.
There's endless possibilities, and I'm ashamed of the people at Paramount and with the Star Trek crew for not making this happen.
It is sad. I mean, it is ambitious. I could see this being a very big deal. Yeah, you'd have to really plan this. You'd have to be extraordinarily organized, especially getting both series involved. But dang it, guys! You shouldn't have passed this one up.
I know. Oh. All right. Well, we could talk about this for the rest of the episode, but let's go ahead and move on.
Okay, what's the next one?
Episode 6, Retrograde. Chakotay suffers from delusions and nightmares about Seska due to a holographic projector she installed in his quarters before crossing over to the Kazon. I think this is a stupid-ass episode.
And, well, you know, Seska would be creepy enough to do something like this, but I would see it coming off as a really stupid episode. And poor Chakotay, has he not had enough of Seska? God, let it go, guys.
I know. Like, okay, so here's the first thing that popped in my head, besides the whole stupid fact that they would be able to find a holographic projector in no time. Like, Chakotay goes and says, like, hey, I'm having some weird things. Things feel weird, like, more real than a nightmare. Can you scan my quarters? Yeah, sure. Oh, it looks like there's a holographic projector in your room. Okay, great. Let's remove that. Okay, besides that, taking 30 seconds.
Yeah.
The thing that popped in my mind is that they didn't earn this type of episode with Chakotay lamenting Seska as much as he would in this episode, where he's having nightmares and delusions and hallucinations. They didn't earn it. They did not talk about their past relationship enough. They didn't show it enough. They didn't. It just didn't exist. Like, we got a little bit of it right before she left, and that's
it. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Had there been some really deep scars, had they shown us that, maybe I could believe this.
Yeah.
But by the time we get to season four, there's been long ago closure with Seska. She's dead. Chakotay's moved on. No, this doesn't work.
And on top of that, it's just like, maybe if they showed us the beginning of Seska and Chakotay, like the beginning of Taurus and Paris, you know, where it's a little bit more of a betrayal, but now it's just like it's a betrayal of, it's like, oh, we had history. Didn't you know that, audience? So this is a betrayal.
Something like that. I'm glad this one got looked over. It's, no, it doesn't even work as a B plot. Sorry.
Yeah, it's just too weird. All right, number seven.
Number seven is titled Cascade Claws, and it says, a major Maquis mutiny rocks the entire ship after Janeway relieves both Chakotay and Torres of their duties. This is season four. Do we need a Maquis story at this point? This sounds like something great for season one or two.
I say yes. As we go further down the list, there's a couple more mentions, or maybe at least one more mention of the Maquis. Think about the aftermath of Basics.
Okay, yeah.
All right. A Maquis member leaves the ship, goes to the Kazon, then comes back and takes over the ship. And that's just one Maquis member. And then, you know, a lot of it can be seen as Janeway allowed this to happen. Now, granted, it was Chakotay who wanted to go forward and you know, get his kid back or whatever. But Janeway's the one who allowed it to happen. Think about the resentment. Think about the resentment building, saying like, okay, like it takes a couple of years where it's like, look at season one, what she did to us. Look at season two, what she did to us. And then look at season three, what she did to us. And then by season four happened, we realized that there was a building resentment, a growing resentment that culminated in an attempted coup. And like, granted, later on, we see it in holographic representation. But what if it actually happened? What if it was a substantial amount? And by substantial amount, what if it was five people? And then from that storyline where like Chakotay and Taurus are trying to defend these people, like, oh, no, it's OK. It's OK. You know, like Janeway's like, no, I mean, I can't, obviously I can't trust you guys anymore. And then they make amends and they go forward, but it's never quite the same. Where they try to rebuild, but then that tension is reintroduced that should have been sustained from seasons one through three. So I see this as a good thing.
Okay, you make a really good case for it. Had we seen this, and this could have been worst case scenario on steroids, because it would have actually happened.
I'm pretty sure that this was the genesis of worst case scenario. Like, this
you're probably right.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Is a season three episode, I could buy it, but by season four, let it go and die. It should have happened a long time ago. That's just how I feel about it.
All right, well, number eight, the Privateers. A group of daring alien mercenaries helps Voyager out of a tight spot, only to make impossible demands in return. Again, this could be anything.
It could be. Impossible demands. Like giving technology, sexual favors.
Or a warp core.
Or a warp core. Right. It would probably, yeah, some resource that Voyager just cannot sacrifice.
Yeah, and we saw that a couple of times throughout the show.
So maybe this actually spawned a few episodes in the future, and it just got broken up a little bit. Yeah, okay, fine.
All right, well, number nine.
Stormbringers. The Borg make a second appearance, presumably after a first appearance in, they say, upcoming season three, so this is an older idea.
Yeah.
No other details are provided, so it's probably a sequel of some sort to that episode. That's all they say.
Yeah.
They just had a title.
another Borg episode. And like, so little did they know how much they were getting of the Borg as the show went on.
If only they had known.
Okay, this next idea is really short, but it kind of piqued my interest. I don't know. Number 10, Labyrinth. Tuvok goes on a Vulcan holodeck adventure of some sort. So, first off, what does that mean? Is this like worst case scenario where he's like, it's just Tuvok trapped in the holodeck? But it says a Vulcan holodeck adventure. Right. What kind of holodeck adventures are the Vulcans specifically using?
I don't know. Is it some sort of workshop with Psurok and his teachings? Is it a meditation session?
Or is it something like where we read in Pathways where he went on a trek through the Vulcan desert to go to a holy place? And maybe it's something like that where it's something that he needed to do but he couldn't do because he's not in the area, you know, he's in the Delta Quadrant, so he has to recreate some sort of labyrinth and use his guile to get through it, but things go wrong, of course.
Well, of course. I see this as a very stereotypical holoduck malfunction episode, which does not entice me at all.
I love those.
Good for you.
I know. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not even saying that they're not overused, because they are. But I gobble them up. I'm like, ooh, goody. You know, like, I have the fan collection of the best holodeck episodes. And, like, 90% of them are malfunctioning holodeck episodes. And
yeah.
I love them.
I don't know. I got a little burnout on holodeck malfunctions after, TNG. So what appeals to me with this is that Tuvok never got enough love on the show. So to have an episode where we could really delve into Tuvok and see some character development, learn more about him. That sounds good. And then how you go about it? Well, obviously it needed some details worked out.
Also, a correction to the fans just now when I said that I have the fan collection of holodecks. That doesn't exist. It's actually my own DVD that I burnt.
Oh.
That I forgot about, that I made it. That's how crazy I am about holodeck episodes.
Man.
Is that
so this was available by Tristan for Tristan.
Yeah.
That's fantastic, dude. You know you're a fan when.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, number 11.
Number 11 is titled Sphere of Influence. And this is where Janeway successfully arbitrates between two quarreling alien factions, only to find herself crowned as their queen.
Now, this sounds like your type of episode.
Yeah, I would probably dig this.
I just love that. Right when I read this one sentence, I could see the entire episode before my eyes.
Uh-huh.
And where it's just like the end of the first act, you just see her sitting in a chair and she's like, why do I have to sit in this chair? Oh, it's ceremonial. It's us thanking you. And she's like, okay, fantastic. And then bam, they slowly put a crown on her on the bun of steel. And she's like, oh, crap.
Uh-oh.
As she looks and winks at the camera. You know, it's just like, it's, I can see it now.
Oh my gosh. This could be a fun one. I could see this as a real episode. I really could. This is sort of like a Babylon 5 sort of story idea with, I think it was the Drazi where they've had the blue and the green factions, and Ivanova sorts that out. But then you've got the twist of, oh, well, now that you've sorted this out, you are the queen! You will rule us forever and keep the peace! And I totally see this happening. Sure. How's Janeway going to get out of this one?
Yeah, this is very TOS to me. Like, this is...
It is.
Like, this feels like something Kirk would have to go through.
Yeah. But this could be fun had they developed it. I probably would have been a fan of this episode. I could see it as a fun little romp.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what's the next one?
All right, number 12, Retaliation. This is what I was talking about. After a Maquis crew member is killed during an away mission, his buddies embark on an unauthorized reprisal against the assailants. Now, this sounds pretty cool, where this is either this happened before the mutiny or in tandem, or like both could feed off of each other, because this could breed new life into like, hey, we didn't forget about you, Maquis. You're not just absorbed into Starfleet. You actually have your own identity. And where, like, those same people who, you know, did the mutiny or are going to do the mutiny are trying to have a reprisal action against the assailants, and Janeway says no. And then by the end of the episode, she curtails their efforts. And then a couple weeks down the line, or half the season down the line, they're like, you know what? We're pissed off at Janeway, and so we're going to we're going to do a coup. So maybe those could feed off each other and give a little bit more mm-hmm. credence to it happening in season four.
Yeah, okay. Had something like this happen, I would totally buy it. Yeah, had this been the precursor? Okay.
Yeah.
I could see this. I could see this building. Yeah. Yep.
Number 13.
Number 13 is The Sentinel. It is a prequel to, of all things, Threshold, with Cadet Paris in Starfleet Academy, and several prominent Star Trek guest appearances are planned.
I got all tingly at this one. I don't know how they do it, because Robert Duncan McNeil ages like any other actor.
Yeah, he's kind of a human, yeah.
Yeah, he's human. You know, he's not 18 anymore. He's not 20. And he's losing his hair. You know, like, I like nothing against Robert McNeil or his appearance, because he looks amazing. And he looked amazing when he was in Voyager, but he doesn't look 18.
No. Nor should he, really. They had another actor play a younger Paris.
But what sucks about that is that we saw Robert Duncan McNeil play a cadet in The Next Generation, so it'd be hard for us to reconcile it in our brains.
Yeah, okay, maybe this is just something, like, should this episode have happened, we would have just had to retcon it. You know what I mean? Like, okay, it's him at 18. He's 18.
Here's the thing to this. Is this showing when he gets kicked out of the Academy? Because if that's the case, we kind of already got that with the TNG episode.
Yeah. I mean, they don't directly acknowledge that that is what happened, but we all know that is what happened. That's true.
Yeah.
So I would make this more of a daddy issues episode, where it's Cadet Paris failing his father and the fallout from that.
Okay.
Which then he's cashiered out of Starfleet and he starts getting himself into a little bit of trouble.
Well, see, I don't know. I just don't know how that would work. It's mm-hmm. just because, like, a prequel to Threshold. I mean, what does that mean? Because in Threshold, he talks about how he's always trying to prove himself. Like, do we just see? But the time when he tried to prove himself is, you know, by doing the maneuver that, you know, killed those other people. So I don't know. I feel like we've already seen. Mm-hmm. Seeing this now, granted, it wasn't Tom Paris. We've all talked about it. We all know about it. It wasn't Tom Paris, but it really was.
Yeah.
And so I just, is even though this excites me, like with just this little information that we have, I don't know how it would work.
Yeah. I think the big thing here is the whole idea of Cadet Paris at the Academy with several cameos by other Trek stars that we're aware of. That's a cool idea, but this is not how it would happen.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how it would happen either.
Yeah.
I can see why this one got dropped.
All right. Well, number 14.
Shards of Time. The crew discovers a Trill ancestor inside a dying Kazon host. My knee-jerk reaction to this is, what?
This one intrigues me because you know, it's an Alpha Quadrant connection, and that's cool. You know, I you know, love that throughout Voyager. Never get tired of it. We saw in TNG that a Trill host cannot survive in another being's body for that long.
Mm-hmm.
So unless they tech the tech, you know, with the idea of like, oh, you know, like this Trill found a way to exist in alien bodies.
But the Kazon of all of them?
The Kazon of all choices.
No. No wonder it's dying.
Yeah. And didn't we leave the Kazon behind in season 3?
Yeah. This sounds like an old...
This has to be an old idea, yeah.
This sounds like a season 2.
So, even though this is intriguing, it kind of gets an eye roll.
Yeah, I mean, okay, where were they going with this? Was there going to be a Trill crew member aboard Voyager who was going to basically become another Dax, you know, the Dax counterpart of Voyager?
Yeah.
I'm really neither here nor there on that. Don't care.
Yeah, I don't know. At first I'm like, oh, cool. And then once you think about it a little bit more, you're like, no.
No. Mm-mm. No. No, don't care. Not interested. Not a great idea, guys.
What's the next one? Number 15, The Breach. Alien hackers attempt to sabotage the Voyager's computer core. Now, this one, I want them to, like, this is the 90s, and so this is when the net was all mysterious and actually called the net, and
yes.
It's just, like, you know, hackers were something to be feared and something, you know, like, really intimidating. This one, I would have loved to have seen something happen where, like, we have like a whole bunch of geek aliens. Like they're wearing their own superhero t-shirts. They're eating Hot Pockets. They have headphones on and they're all in their own little, you know, 24th century room. But they're like, dude, I totally just pwned the Voyager.
We just see like happy faces on the screen and it talks back and this really could be a lot of fun.
And then like up on the like you we see emoticons on the view screen on the bridge. See a guy shaking his finger going ah. He didn't say the magic word.
Yes. Oh, okay. As silly as this idea is, it really could have some meat to the story because it would be sort of like a rip from the headlines thing or commentary on hackers and the possibility of the internet being this horrible, dangerous place. But then you could have so much fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah. You could have a lot of fun. Like this could be one of those episodes where it doesn't need to be life or death, mm-hmm. but it's like you need to act because people are hacking your sensitive information, and this is information that can't go out. But at the same time, it could be like hijinks and being mischievous and everything like that with these alien teenagers. They have to be teenagers. They just have to be.
Oh, they would have to be, no doubt. Yes. And there would be pizza involved. Maybe that's how Tommy befriends them, is with pizza.
With pizza. He bribes them with his best pizza recipe.
This could really be something. And you know what's interesting about this idea is, despite all the hubbub about the internet back then, when this episode was formulated, I would say it's just as relevant, if not even more so now. Think about all the times that hackers have taken data, like the Target scandal, and this new thing where Russian hackers took billions of usernames and passwords. Mm-hmm. Who the heck even knows the fallout on that right now?
And how the Chinese are continually attacking our defenses, and not just stealing passwords, but you're actually attacking government defenses. And so, even though it was mysterious back in the 90s, it's still scary today because we are aware of what's going on.
Yeah, I think it's even more real now because it's actually happening. Back then, I think it was more of just a threat. It was something sensationalized by movies and possibilities. Now it's happening.
Let's round third and give us our last one, number 16.
Okay, saving what could be the best for last. Titled Quartered, Q makes his third appearance as he temporarily brings the Voyager back. I hate it when they say the Voyager. No, it's Voyager, not the Voyager. Sorry, complaint. Brings Voyager back to the Alpha Quadrant, where he tries to convince the crew that the Federation has been defeated by the Dominion and that they're better off in the Delta Quadrant. This show will celebrate TNG's 10th anniversary and will feature part of the TNG cast.
I like the idea, as I've said before, of integrating Alpha Quadrant stuff and like having cameos and features. So this way we'd have more than just Deanna Troi and Riker showing up in the show. Maybe we could even get like Picard in there or Data in there or or Worf, you know, like anybody from TNG, you know, like just even just one person, you know, would be really cool to see. But the thing is, though, is that this is evil. From Q. This isn't Q being mischievous. This is Q being evil. This is, like, what's his goal here? Like, why is he trying to do this? Like, is he... Like, the only way that I could see this happening is if he's trying to save them from something and they won't listen. Like, the whole Dobby Harry Potter thing where, you know, it just doesn't make sense until you find out his ulterior motives. But this is dark. Like, this is... Like, if you think about it.
Yeah. I kind of think that they're a little off base here. I think it is too dark for Q. He would have to have a really good reason to do something like this. And I just don't see it. This is not Q as we know him. He's too much of a goofball to do something this drastic.
Now, if this was, you know, during the Q-Who era, where he introduced us to the Borg and he throws us into games where we think people are going to die, but this is post-Q-Pid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't want it to be a repeat either of Q, we need you. Help.
Yeah.
Send us back to the Delta Quadrant. I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
No, I don't want. I think it would have been fantastic to celebrate TNG's 10th anniversary. That was a great idea. But the manner in which they were thinking about doing this, forget it.
Yeah, just the whole, like, I like the idea of like an alternate universe where the Dominion defeated the Federation. But I feel like you could have done that without Q. I feel like they find a way home, maybe like they find a way home where, you know, they tech the tech, they go through a wormhole, they go through a nebula that envelops their ship and then shoots them forward. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out here. But they find a way home, but then they realize, oh, crap, this is an alternate universe. You know, and it's where the Dominion defeated the Alpha Quadrant. And yeah, I feel like with that in mind, and then they're like, okay, well, obviously we can't stay here, so we have to go back.
And then maybe they find out Q was involved in this somehow, and then ultimately Q does take them back. There's a lot missing here, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, granted, these are just a couple of sentences thrown together, so we don't know what they were thinking or why they were thinking it. So we should give them the benefit of the doubt because it's an interesting idea, but with the information that we have, it feels a little off.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that, I believe we are done with this list. Well, that was fun.
That was fun. It's interesting to talk about what could have been and what never was.
Yes, all that could have been. Sometimes that was a good thing. Sometimes they really dropped the ball. But rumored episode ideas aren't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I'm just going to say this up front. I don't know if it's Koenig or Koenig. I've heard both. I'm going to go with Koenig. But if I'm wrong, just pretend I said Koenig the whole time.
And I'll go with Koenig. All right. And then,
so our bases and then, are covered.
So we'll both, yes. Okay. One of us will be right.
Earl Grey.
They're like, we're supposed to be decommissioned. And Kirk's like, second star to the right. And then, like, what happens after that moment? They're like, they just start like...
Five minutes later, it's like, well...
I guess we have to turn around.
To the Journey! To the Journey is community. And that's what you find with Star Trek. And that's why we do what we do. And that's why we love it when you guys write us. Find us on Twitter, and that's why we're all friends on Trek.fm, is because we have this sense of community, and that's what it brings. It's not just about a show, it's about each other. Warp 5.
Mm-hmm. Archer's way is the right way. He brings the light. She walks into the light to talk to Archer, because then she is enlightened, because he is an enlightened man. She walks back into the darkness and retreats back into her world to pick up the slates and go teach the kids about the humans and the Skagarians and all that kind of stuff.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I think it would be fun, in order to prove my point, would be like to us have us play a game of Monopoly, and also two players entirely determined by randomness. Two fictional players would be Mike, Max, Blue, and Green.
Continuing mission.
When we made the audio drama, it was a fairly straightforward transition. Let's call this ship the Excelsior. Let's make it the fourth one to bear the name. Let's put it in the Delta Quadrant. But now that we're there, I'm really happy with a lot of those things.
Melodic Treks.
Second Marriage took place in August 6th, 1963, to Camille J. Williams, a Las Vegas dancer, and they had two children. And yes, I know, he divorced and married in the same year. I ain't gonna go anywhere near that. You draw your own conclusions.
Literary Treks.
I think I posited the idea that Lal was kidnapped, and Margaret just said in her Margaret E. way, she just said, Moriarty.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of our shows. We are available on virtually every platform. Or if you just want to go to our website, trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory will take you to all of our stuff. And you can listen away and have endless hours of Trek Talk. And none of these podcasts would be possible anymore without the help of our sponsor, because this stuff costs money. So let's thank our sponsor.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
So we have one iTunes review. to talk about. Tar Heel Trek gave us 5 stars, wrote us a short review. We thank you for doing that. And if you haven't already, go to trek.fm/review and get in on what is going to be the last week of our reviews promotion, because that ends on August 17th at midnight Pacific time. What you'll do there is you'll write out a little form, let us know who you were and where you wrote a review, and then you're in a drawing for several prizes. So if you haven't done that already, get on it. If you haven't written a review, you better do it. And time is running out. I think we have another really good episode coming up next week, Tristan. What are we going to do?
What we're doing is something that really fascinates me, and I love talking about it, and I've talked about this a little bit online, and I can't wait to talk about it with you. Next week, we're going to pretend that Voyager never happened, and we're going to figure out what it would be like if it was created and aired today, whether that's on CBS, NBC, of course, disregarding rights. We all know about
yeah,
the rights.
Never mind that,
but we're going to be disregarding rights and saying, like, what would it be like on a primetime cable network? What would it be on a paid-for cable network? What would it be like on a network, you know, an aired network? We're going to try to figure out what it would look like, how it would change, and what would be different.
So until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!